Part 1A, listen to a long conversation and choose the correct letter A, B, C or D. Part 1B, listen to a long conversation and write a correct answer with no more than 3 words for each question. The recording will be played twice.
We'll be looking into the largest state in America, Alaska. If you look at the location of Alaska on the map, you can see that it is bordered by Canada on the east, the Arctic Ocean on the north, the Bering Strait and Bering Sea to the east, and the Gulf of Alaska. Wait a minute, sorry about that. To the west, and the Gulf of Alaska to the south. And as you can see on the map, Alaska has a greater land area than California and Texas combined. Now, although there are many cities in Alaska, the population is so low that an average number of students in a middle school classroom is only about 10. You can imagine many desolate small towns scattered around Alaska. It's probably because roads and railways serve only certain portions of the state. So it's natural that Alaskans rely heavily on airplanes for transportation, since many parts of Alaska are accessible only via air. Well, of course, there is a railway operating between Fairbanks, a relatively big city in central Alaska, and Seward, a city on the southern coast. It is much more popular than the only major highway in Alaska, the Alaska Highway, which is open throughout the year. Not that there's much traffic. One does not need to venture far to understand the reason for its sparse population. Even though cold climate and other factors make most of Alaska a less than desirable location for farming, agriculture is conducted in a few areas between Fairbanks and the southern coast. Most of the food Alaskans need, however, must be imported from outside the state. Also, Alaska is subject to strong earthquakes and occasional volcanic activity. Your textbook describes the explosion of the Alaskan volcano Mount Katmai in the early 20th century as one of the most famous and violent volcanic eruptions in history. I strongly suggest you read up on that chapter, as we'll be touching on some of that the next time. Anyway, where was I? Oh yes, earthquakes. These occasional earthquakes generate seismic sea waves called tsunamis. As you may have heard, these waves can reach far inland and destroy communities along the shore. It wasn't much different from the terrible tsunami of 2004.
Listen again.
We'll be looking into the largest state in America, Alaska. If you look at the location of Alaska on the map, you can see that it is bordered by Canada on the east, the Arctic Ocean on the north, the Bering Strait and Bering Sea to the east, and the Gulf of Alaska. Wait a minute, sorry about that. To the west, and the Gulf of Alaska to the south. And as you can see on the map, Alaska has a greater land area than California and Texas combined. Now, although there are many cities in Alaska, the population is so low that an average number of students in a middle school classroom is only about 10. You can imagine many desolate small towns scattered around Alaska. It's probably because roads and railways serve only certain portions of the state. So it's natural that Alaskans rely heavily on airplanes for transportation, since many parts of Alaska are accessible only via air.
Well, of course, there is a railway operating between Fairbanks, a relatively big city in central Alaska, and Seward, a city on the southern coast. It is much more popular than the only major highway in Alaska, the Alaska Highway, which is open throughout the year. Not that there's much traffic. One does not need to venture far to understand the reason for its sparse population. Even though cold climate and other factors make most of Alaska a less than desirable location for farming, agriculture is conducted in a few areas between Fairbanks and the southern coast. Most of the food Alaskans need, however, must be imported from outside the state. Also, Alaska is subject to strong earthquakes and occasional volcanic activity. Your textbook describes the explosion of the Alaskan volcano Mount Katmai in the early 20th century as one of the most famous and violent volcanic eruptions in history. I strongly suggest you read up on that chapter, as we'll be touching on some of that the next time. Anyway, where was I? Oh yes, earthquakes. These occasional earthquakes generate seismic sea waves called tsunamis. As you may have heard, these waves can reach far inland and destroy communities along the shore. It wasn't much different from the terrible tsunami of 2004.
Now you have 2.5 minutes to transfer your answers into the answer sheet. Part 2. Listen to a long conversation and complete a summary. Write only one word and or a number for each answer. The recording will be played twice.
Morning. Welcome to the Early Learning Childcare Centre. How may I help you?
Hi, I spoke to you last week about enrolling my daughter for next year.
Oh yes, I'll just get some details from you. So, you're her mother?
That's right.
And can I have your name?
It's Carol. Carol Smith.
And your daughter's name?
It's Kate.
Now, we have several groups at the centre and we cater for children from 3 to 5 years old. How old is your daughter?
She's 3 now, but she turns 4 next month.
I'll put 4 down because that's how old she'll be when she starts.
Fine. She's so excited about her birthday and coming to the centre.
Oh, that's good to hear. And what's your address?
It's 46 Wombat Road. That's Wombat. Woodside 4032.
And what's the phone number?
Oh, It's 3345-9865.
So, have you decided on the days you would like to bring your daughter here?
I'd prefer Monday and Wednesday if possible.
I'll check. Monday's fine, but I think the centre is already full for Wednesday. Yes. Sorry, it seems to be a very popular day. We can offer you a Thursday or a Friday as well.
Oh, dear. I suppose Thursday would be all right because she has swimming on Friday.
OK, got that. Because a lot of parents work, we do offer flexible start and finish times. We're open from 7:30 in the morning until 6 o'clock at night. What time would you like your daughter to start?
I need to get to work in the city by 9, so I'll drop her off at 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
You're pretty close to the city here, so that should give me plenty of time to get there.
That's fine. Now, we also need to decide which group she'll be in. We have two different groups, and they're divided up according to age. There's the green group, which is for 3 to 4 year olds, and then there's the red group, which is for 4 to 5 year olds.
She's quite mature for her age, and she can already write her name and read a little.
Well, I'll put her in the red group, and we can always change her to the green one if there are any problems.
That sounds fine.
OK, let's move on to meals. We can provide breakfast, lunch and dinner. As she's finishing pretty early, she won't need dinner. Will you give her breakfast before she comes?
Yes, she'll only need lunch.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 7 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 7 to 10.
Now, does she have any medical conditions we need to know about? Does she have asthma or any hearing problems, for example?
No, but she does need to wear glasses.
Oh, I'll make a note of that.
Yeah, she's pretty good about wearing them. She can't see much without them.
Right. OK. Now, I also need emergency contact details.
So what sort of information do you need?
Just the name and number of a friend or family member we can contact in case we can't get hold of you at any time.
OK. That'd better be my sister, Jenny Ball.
Uh-huh.
That's B-A-L-L. Her phone number is 3346-7523.
Great. So she is the child's aunt?
Yes, that's right.
I'll make a note of that as well. Now, is there anything you'd like to ask?
What about payment? How much are the fees each term?
Well, for 2 days and the hours you've chosen, that will be $450 altogether.
OK. And do I have to pay that now?
No. We send out invoices once the children start at the centre. You can choose to pay at the end of each term, or we do offer a slightly discounted rate if you pay every month.
Oh, I'll do that then. I find it easier to budget that way and I'm not used to the term dates just yet.
Good. It makes it a lot simpler for us as well.
Listen again.
Good morning. Welcome to the Early Learning Childcare Centre. How may I help you?
Hi. I spoke to you last week about enrolling my daughter for next year.
Oh, yes. I'll just get some details from you. So, you're her mother?
That's right.
And can I have your name?
It's Carol. Carol Smith.
And your daughter's name?
It's Kate.
Now, we have several groups at the centre and we cater for children from 3 to 5 years old. How old is your daughter?
She's 3 now, but she turns 4 next month.
I'll put 4 down because that's how old she'll be when she starts.
Fine. She's so excited about her birthday and coming to the centre.
Oh, that's good to hear. And what's your address?
It's 46 Wombat Road. That's W-O-M-B-A-T. Woodside 4032.
And what's the phone number?
Oh, it's 3345 9865.
So, have you decided on the days you would like to bring your daughter here?
I'd prefer Monday and Wednesday if possible.
I'll check. Monday's fine, but I think the centre is already full for Wednesday. Yes. Sorry, it seems to be a very popular day. We can offer you a Thursday or a Friday as well.
Oh, dear. I suppose Thursday would be all right because she has swimming on Friday.
Okay, got that. Because a lot of parents work, we do offer flexible start and finish times. We're open from 7:30 in the morning until 6 o'clock at night. What time would you like your daughter to start?
I need to get to work in the city by 9, so I'll drop her off at 8:30.
Mm-hmm.
You're pretty close to the city here, so that should give me plenty of time to get there.
That's fine. Now, we also need to decide which group she'll be in. We have two different groups, and they're divided up according to age. There's the green group, which is for 3 to 4 year olds, and then there's the red group, which is for 4 to 5 year olds.
She's quite mature for her age, and she can already write her name and read a little.
Well, I'll put her in the red group, and we can always change her to the green one if there are any problems.
That sounds fine.
OK, let's move on to meals. We can provide breakfast, lunch and dinner. As she's finishing pretty early, she won't need dinner. Will you give her breakfast before she comes?
Yes, she'll only need lunch.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 7 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 7 to 10.
Now, does she have any medical conditions we need to know about? Does she have asthma or any hearing problems, for example?
No, but she does need to wear glasses.
Oh, I'll make a note of that.
Yeah, she's pretty good about wearing them. She can't see much without them.
Right. OK. Now, I also need emergency contact details.
So what sort of information do you need?
Just the name and number of a friend or family member we can contact in case we can't get hold of you at any time.
OK. That'd better be my sister, Jenny Ball.
Uh-huh.
That's B-A-L-L. Her phone number is 3346 7523.
Great. So she is the child's aunt?
Yes, that's right.
I'll make a note of that as well. Now, is there anything you'd like to ask?
What about payment? How much are the fees each term?
Well, for 2 days and the hours you've chosen, that will be $450 altogether.
OK, and do I have to pay that now?
No, we send out invoices once the children start at the centre. You can choose to pay at the end of each term, or we do offer a slightly discounted rate if you pay every month.
Oh, I'll do that then. I find it easier to budget that way, and I'm not used to the term dates just yet.
Good. It makes it a lot simpler for us as well.
Now you have 2.5 minutes to transfer your answers into the answer sheet. Part 3. Listen to a long conversation and write short answers. The recording will be played twice.
I had no idea that allergies were so serious and so common.
Yeah, they are. I'm allergic to strawberries, peanuts, and chocolate. And I love chocolate.
Wow. Allergic to chocolate? That must be really hard.
It is. Are you allergic to anything?
No, at least not that I know of. I don't really know much about allergies, fortunately.
Yeah, you're lucky. My allergies are really bad sometimes, especially in spring and early summer. And I also have asthma.
Oh, you have asthma too? It can't be easy for you living in the city with all this air pollution then, can it?
Well, the air pollution is bad, but I find it much harder to be around smoke. It's really hard for me to breathe. I also can't be around cats for too long. And some kinds of flowers also cause my asthma to act up. Fortunately, my asthma medication works really quickly, and I feel better almost immediately.
Well, that's good. What about food allergies? Those can be really bad too, can't they?
You bet. Like I said, I'm allergic to chocolate, strawberries, and peanuts.
I'd hate to be allergic to chocolate. I can't live without chocolate.
Well, believe me, it's not easy. But being allergic to peanuts is actually harder because you don't always know when food contains peanuts or peanut oil.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, yesterday in class, Professor Martinez was telling us that there is a no peanuts policy here on campus because allergies can be really dangerous.
Yeah, that's right. The cafeteria and snack bar stopped serving foods that contained peanuts and peanut oil last year after a student had an allergic reaction and was rushed to the hospital.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Professor Martinez called food allergies the new allergy problem.
Yeah, that's right. And she also said that there were twice as many children with food allergies in 2002 than in 1997. I think it's called the new allergy problem because it's growing very quickly. I read that nowadays about 6% of children have food allergies.
6%? Wow, that's a lot of kids.
It sure is.
Listen again.
I had no idea that allergies were so serious and so common.
Yeah, they are. I'm allergic to strawberries, peanuts, and chocolate. And I love chocolate.
Wow. Allergic to chocolate? That must be really hard.
It is. Are you allergic to anything?
No, at least not that I know of. I don't really know much about allergies, fortunately.
Yeah, you're lucky. My allergies are really bad sometimes, especially in spring and early summer. And I also have asthma.
Oh, you have asthma too? It can't be easy for you living in the city with all this air pollution then, can it?
Well, the air pollution is bad, but I find it much harder to be around smoke. It's really hard for me to breathe. I also can't be around cats for too long. And some kinds of flowers also cause my asthma to act up. Fortunately, my asthma medication works really quickly, and I feel better almost immediately.
Well, that's good. What about food allergies? Those can be really bad too, can't they?
You bet. Like I said, I'm allergic to chocolate, strawberries, and peanuts.
I'd hate to be allergic to chocolate. I can't live without chocolate.
Well, believe me, it's not easy. But being allergic to peanuts is actually harder because you don't always know when food contains peanuts or peanut oil.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, yesterday in class, Professor Martinez was telling us that there is a no peanuts policy here on campus because allergies can be really dangerous.
Yeah, that's right. The cafeteria and snack bar stopped serving foods that contained peanuts and peanut oil last year after a student had an allergic reaction and was rushed to the hospital.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Professor Martinez called food allergies the new allergy problem.
Yeah, that's right. And she also said that there were twice as many children with food allergies in 2002 than in 1997. I think it's called the new allergy problem because it's growing very quickly. I read that nowadays about 6% of children have food allergies.
6%? Wow, that's a lot of kids.
It sure is.
Now you have 2.5 minutes to transfer your answers into the answer sheet.
Part 4. Listen to a lecture and complete the outline. The recording will be played twice.
Okay, I'm ready to begin, so let's get started. So we're going to continue our discussion of mass communications today. Now, I want you to remember that when you say mass communications, we mean communication from one person or group of people through a medium, which is some communication device, to many different people at once. So there are many people who are the receivers of the information. All right, so let me just get that on the board. So information through a medium Okay, too many. Now today, we'll look at how mass communication has changed over the centuries. Okay, we'll be looking at three major changes, revolutions really, in the history of mass communication. Now, the first communication revolution was the development of phonetic writing. So, first was the development of phonetic writing. All right, now this occurred 3,000 years ago. So it's 3,000 years ago. All right, now the development of phonetic writing meant that writing moved away from using pictographs. Okay, now these are symbols that represent objects and ideas and moved toward using symbols to represent the actual sound of the spoken word. Now let me give you an example. Now, in pictographic writing, people actually drew some kind of picture of an idea. So, for example, to communicate the idea of a dog, they actually drew a dog. But in phonetic writing, people represented the sound, d, o, g, with three letters, d, o, g. Now, this was revolutionary. Why? Because it made writing easier. It was smaller. So it was actually easier to produce. So we see a real change in writing style. Now, not only did the style of writing change, but the medium on which the writing appeared changed also. Pictographic writing was done on heavy clay tablets, tablets that were so heavy that they really weren't portable. But around the same time that phonetic writing developed, a new medium was invented, papyrus. Now, papyrus was a type of paper made from a grass plant. Now, you can imagine that this paper was much lighter than clay. So this combination of a lightweight medium, papyrus, and phonetic writing made information more portable, so it could reach a bigger audience. Now, it also made it easier and cheaper to store the information. So information became more portable and storable. So this meant that for the first time, people had access to written material. So more people became literate. All right? That is, they learned to read and write, which led to wider communication. So people in different societies could convey information to people in other parts of the world. So you see, this was really the beginning of mass communication. One group or one person could now communicate with many people. So as societies grew more literate, this resulted in a demand for materials for people to read. So do you get the picture? All right? Because at this point, we're ready to look at the next change. The bigger population of readers created the second communications revolution, and that's printing. So the second is printing. And it also includes the printing press. Now, a printing press meant that information could be reproduced quickly. Now, in the year 305, so 1,700 years ago, the first wooden printing presses were invented in China. The printing press became more widely used when Johannes Gutenberg invented a printing press in Germany in the year 1455, and that used metal and movable type. Now, this was a very significant invention. The metal printing press made it faster and easier to print books and materials. And faster meant that more information was available to many more people. Now, let me explain why this is considered a revolution. Before the printing press, knowledge and information were in the hands of only a few privileged people. Okay, a scholar who wanted to know some specific thing or get some specific information had to travel to the place where the information was kept. But once information could be copied easily, With the printing press, the information itself could travel to people beyond the society that created it. Okay? And with the printing press, information was more accessible. So it was accessible to everyone. So you really see how big this revolution was. Okay, now it's not a surprise that libraries developed as well, because it was easier to store information on paper. Information was now both portable and easy to store. Okay? Now this brings me to the third communications revolution, and that is computers. All right. Now we are all part of this revolution, which began in the 1950s, the computer revolution. Now computers have become the electronic storehouses and transmitters of large amounts of information, information that previously only existed in physical form. Okay? It was carved in stone or written on paper. Computer technology makes everything quicker and easier. Computers process, transmit, and store information much more efficiently than any previous system. Computers have changed the nature of mass communication. So, to wrap up, you can see from these changes that there are three ideas that are key to mass communication. And let me just state them clearly. First, the ability to store information. Second, the ability to transport information. And finally, having access to information. These are essential to mass communication. Okay? See you on Tuesday.
Listen again.
Okay, I'm ready to begin, so let's get started. So we're going to continue our discussion of mass communications today. Now, I want you to remember that when you say mass communications, we mean communication from one person or group of people through a medium, which is some communication device, to many different people at once. So there are many people who are the receivers of the information. All right, so let me just get that on the board. So, information through a medium to many. Now today, we'll look at how mass communication has changed over the centuries. Okay? We'll be looking at three major changes, revolutions really, in the history of mass communication. Now, the first communication revolution was the development of phonetic writing. So, first was the development of phonetic writing. All right. Now, this occurred 3,000 years ago. 3,000 years ago. All right. Now, the development of phonetic writing meant that writing moved away from using pictographs. Okay. Now, these are symbols that represent objects and ideas and move toward using symbols to represent the actual sound of the spoken word. Now, let me give you an example. Now, in pictographic writing, people actually drew some kind of picture of an idea. So, for example, to communicate the idea of a dog, they actually drew a dog. But in phonetic writing, people represented the sound d-o-g with three letters, d-o-g. Now, this was revolutionary. Why? Because it made writing easier. It was smaller, so it was actually easier to produce. So we see a real change in writing style. Now, not only did the style of writing change, but the medium on which the writing appeared changed also. Pictographic writing was done on heavy clay tablets, tablets that were so heavy that they really weren't portable. But around the same time that phonetic writing developed, a new medium was invented, papyrus. Now, papyrus was the type of paper made from a grass plant. Now, you can imagine that this paper was much lighter than clay. So this combination of a lightweight medium, papyrus, and phonetic writing made information more portable, so it could reach a bigger audience. Now, it also made it easier and cheaper to store the information. So information became more portable and storable. So this meant that for the first time, people had access to written material. So more people became literate. All right? That is, they learned to read and write, which led to wider communication. So people in different societies could convey information to people in other parts of the world. So you see, this was really the beginning of mass communication. One group or one person could now communicate with many people. So as societies grew more literate, this resulted in a demand for materials for people to read. So do you get the picture? All right? Because at this point, we're ready to look at the next change. The bigger population of readers created the second communications revolution, and that's printing. So the second is printing. And it also includes the printing press. Now, a printing press meant that information could be reproduced quickly. Now, in the year 305, so 1,700 years ago, the first wooden printing presses were invented in China. The printing press became more widely used when Johannes Gutenberg invented a printing press in Germany in the year 1455, and that used metal and movable type. Now, this was a very significant invention. The metal printing press made it faster and easier to print books and materials. And faster meant that more information was available to many more people. Now, let me explain why this is considered a revolution. Before the printing press, knowledge and information were in the hands of only a few privileged people. Okay? A scholar who wanted to know some specific thing or get some specific information had to travel to the place where the information was kept. But once information could be copied easily with the printing press, the information itself could travel to people beyond the society that created it. Okay? And with the printing press, information was more accessible. So it was accessible to everyone. So you really see how big this revolution was. Okay, now it's not a surprise that libraries developed as well, because it was easier to store information on paper. Information was now both portable and easy to store. Okay? Now this brings me to the third communications revolution, and that is computers. All right. Now, we are all part of this revolution, which began in the 1950s, the computer revolution. Now, computers have become the electronic storehouses and transmitters of large amounts of information, information that previously only existed in physical form. Okay? It was carved in stone or written on paper. Computer technology makes everything quicker and easier. Computers process, transmit, and store information much more efficiently than any previous system. Computers have changed the nature of mass communication. So, to wrap up, you can see from these changes that there are three ideas that are key to mass communication. And let me just state them clearly. First, the ability to store information. Second, the ability to transport information. And finally, having access to information. These are essential to mass communication. Okay? See you on Tuesday.
Now you have 2.5 minutes to transfer your answers into the answer sheet.